Welcome to the Bogosity Podcast for the 2nd of February 2015, the podcast that's shoveling it out of your driveway. This is your host, Shane Killian, and joining me again this week is Dave Turcotte. Dave, welcome back to the show.
It's good to be here. I managed to shovel myself out of 20 feet of snow, except not really, because it wasn't that bad. It actually could have been a lot worse.
How much did you get?
About a foot or so, which is still a lot for a lot of places. But the snow was that light, fluffy dust kind of snow,
oh,
and the wind
yeah.
was blowing enough that it really minimized a lot of the shoveling. It really cold, though. Really, really goddamn cold.
Here, a foot of snow would shut everything down, but we get that really wet, icy type of snow.
We got that, I want to say, 2 weeks ago, actually. So we still had snow on the ground as this came down.
Ah, but it's like I've been up to Michigan when it's, you know, like 2 feet of snow out there. I'm like, I can drive on this.
Yeah.
This is nothing. I was driving better than the Yankees up there, you know, their SUVs with Michigan plates, and they were sliding around running into mailboxes and telephone poles. I was in a 2001 Crown Vic, and I was fine.
Well, it's funny, too, because I was talking to John, and, you know, John's like, man, it's a bone-chilling 60 degrees in Florida. And I'm like, that's air conditioning weather.
Oh, man. My fiance and her kids are from Florida, so... They're like, eh, it's cold. I'm like, I have the temperature here set at 74 degrees. I upped it 2 degrees from what I normally do, and you're still saying it's cold in here.
I'm so used to this kind of cold weather that I could actually go out in this in like a t-shirt and be like, oh, it's a little chilly.
60 degrees to me is long sleeve, no jacket weather. That's what it is to me.
Yeah, 60 degrees is I'm out there in shorts.
All right, well, let's pile drive the news of the bogus. So, Dave, you have more news from the Gamergate front?
Yeah, ABC decided to cover this on Nightline a couple weeks ago.
And oh, that show.
Yeah. Oh, my God, was this bad. This was just awful. Basically, what they did was they continued the whole narrative of it's just evil basement-dwelling male gamers trying to abuse, you know, poor... victimized Anita Sarkeesian and Brianna Wu.
Yeah, please, victimize me as much as they are. Please.
You know what kills me? If you actually go back and watch the footage, you could see they say, this is the normal everyday life of Anita Sarkeesian as she's walking to the car escorted by police. But do you see the smile on her face?
Oh yeah, I saw that.
The liar smile. And listen, mm-hmm. if your life was under such a direct threat that you needed to be escorted by police legitimately... I wouldn't be smiling.
Around here, we call that a shit-eating grin.
Exactly. That's exactly what that is. And it's comical, to say the least. And here's the thing about the ABC piece. First thing they do is they give Anita all this airtime to talk about all her bullshit. And they give almost no time to Gamergate. And they try to say that the problem is you have male gamers... constantly harassing women. And do they show any kind of studies on this or show all kinds of evidence? Hell no. They show one example, one that they very easily could have set up themselves and not told anybody. And not only that, but they were showing, I think the game was Counter-Strike. I could be wrong about that. But they were showing a woman playing Counter-Strike, and this one guy in there was being a jerk and saying all kinds of disgusting things to her, like... you know, hitting on her, but a little more aggressive.
You get that.
Yeah, but you get that anyway.
You get that if you're a guy.
But here's the thing. Here's what they ignored. If you actually watch the footage, you can see the other male gamers telling this guy to stop spamming, to shut up,
yeah,
and to leave her alone. But of course, they're not going to mention that.
Of course not.
No, instead, that's their blanket statement about male gamers, that we're playing games in our mother's basements and we hit on women. In fact, the only person that they had on there to talk about from the gamer's perspective, they made sure to go out of their way to say that he is not part of Gamergate.
You know, it's upsetting. TV media loves to bring out this false balance, you know, like someone sensible comes on TV to talk about science and they have to give equal time to some nut who thinks the Earth is 6,000 years old or whatever. But whenever, and Nightline is one of the worst of these, you know, they cover some psychic woo or alt-med bogosity. They might bring in a skeptic like James Randi and only show you 10 seconds of his interview taken completely out of context. Here, they didn't even do that much.
Here's the thing. ABC has always sucked. ABC has always been terrible.
The only time it wasn't is when John Stossel was on.
And to be perfectly frank, I don't think enough people give ABC shit. I mean, you always hear about MSNBC and Fox, and don't get me wrong, they're horrible too. Nobody's taking away from how horrible they are. But ABC, just as bad, if not worse. This is the same station, ABC. You remember the whole debt ceiling fiasco. This
oh,
was the
yeah.
same news station that on their World News and Nightline and Good Morning America, they had a countdown clock to what they called Armageddon.
Oh, God.
If they didn't reach a deal wow. on the debt ceiling. It is embarrassing how bad ABC is. And as I was saying, ABC is worse than MSNBC and Fox, because they try to be subtle about their bullshit. They don't outright say that they support one party or another, which they clearly do, but they just don't come out and say it. They try to be deceitful about it.
Yeah.
And that's the worst. Like, Fox, yeah, they suck, but at least they're honest about their shittiness.
Well, I don't know. They're still doing that whole fair and balanced thing.
Yeah, but I mean, at the very least, they're blatantly open about who they support.
Yeah,
they might say they're fair and balanced. I mean, yeah, it's obvious that they're full of shit. ABC, the less intuitive, might actually believe them. I think that's a fair statement.
But I mean, is it too much to ask for Nightline to do any basic research? I mean, they opened up this segment talking about women being raped in Grand Theft Auto V, and there are no rape sequences in Grand Theft Auto V. And I have a link in the show notes to a Twitter exchange with Brianna Wu, because she made that same claim, and someone pointed out to her, no, there's no rape in Grand Theft Auto V. Her reply was, quote, plenty of mods have this.
What a
You can't
dumb...
hold a gaming company responsible for what modders do.
Seriously, that's user-inputted creative content. You can't... Well, let me tell you something about Brianna Wu, okay? Brianna Wu is one of these typical social justice warriors who talks about how minorities and women are oppressed and all that shit, and how they're not allowed to make games because the evil patriarchy won't let them. Well, let me tell you something about Brianna Wu, okay? She came from a rich family, and her father gave her $200,000 to fulfill her dream of making a game. And yes, she has an all-female dev team. That's perfectly fine. So what game does she make to try and break away from the patriarchy's evil hold on negative female stereotypes? A game with all white women with large chests. So, Brianna Wu, you are another con artist who is making the rounds on all those news stations like MSNBC and all that. Anita Sarkeesian is a blatant con artist.
Oh, yeah. We've talked about her before.
Yes, and now it's being discovered that she has ties with people who are under suspicion of being con men. Work kind of deals where they hold those seminars on how to get into these big business ventures.
Oh, I know the kind you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah.
But I want to examine her claims, and there was something in this piece about a game called Watch Dogs, and as much as I would love to, I just don't have the time to play games, so I can't really say about this personally, but I did some research on Watch Dogs, and Sarkeesian was saying that it's sexist because there's a guy who murders a woman in order to motivate the hero to chase the bad guy. But according to what I read, Watch Dogs randomizes that. It might be a guy killing a guy, or I don't know what the different options are, if it's a bad guy character, or it might be, if they randomize the bad guy, it might be a woman killing a woman, whatever. A lot of those characters are randomized.
I never played Watch Dogs, so I don't know for sure, but even without the randomized, I mean, if you saw somebody killing women on the street, would you try to stop them?
Oh, yeah.
What's sexist about that? See, the fact that her statement was, you're using this as a motivation to stop the bad guy, is that not a good enough motivation for you? That's kind of sexist that you would let women die because you don't want to be motivated to stop a bad guy.
Yeah.
I mean, this is ridiculous. And to make matters worse, ABC, oh my God, the YouTube comments, when they posted this video on YouTube, they actually were deleting comments. They started deleting comments from notable people like Total Biscuit.
ABC did?
Yes, ABC.
Wow.
It got to the point that people started archiving the comments and reposting them in the video. And another thing I want to point out, speaking of the YouTube video, the video has about 238,710 views. Now, they tried to say that Gamergate was a vocal minority. Okay? Now, tell me if this is a vocal minority. The likes, 1,173. The dislikes, 33,408.
Wow.
Vocal minority, my ass. You know what this is all about? Gamers are tired of people like Anita Sarkeesian, like Brianna Wu, like Jack Thompson in the days of old. We've been told for years and years that our hobby is a catalyst of evil in some form or another.
Yeah, it causes violence, it causes mass shootings, yeah.
And these people are not new. We've been dealing with this shit since the dawn of entertainment. I'm sure back when plays were first a thing, somebody out there was going, no, that's too much fun. I got to put a stop to that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a few months ago, I don't know if you heard Charles and I were talking about Vinegar Valentines, which was basically in the 19th century, you could send anonymously a hate Valentine to someone. And one of their targets was people who read novels and how they don't wash and can't get a date and things like that. And I'm like, isn't that exactly what they say about gamers today?
Yeah, that's exactly what they say about gamers today. And, you know, these people just hate fun is what it comes down to. I don't necessarily know why they hate fun, but they hate fun enough that they want to stop other people from having it. And no one's surprised that ABC is taking a blatantly anti-Gamergate stance. You're dealing with basically a consumer revolution where they're tired of gaming journalists treating them like pieces of shit. I mean, these gaming journalists came out and blatantly said, gamers are dead. They are not the audience we need to focus on.
Wow.
This is gaming journalists. They're telling you that their own customers are dead to them.
Well, and ABC was saying things like, oh, no, this is because about gamers are resistant to change in video games. Are you resistant to change in video games?
No, but the problem is these people don't want change to simply have a different kind of market. They want to take away the market that they find offensive, too.
But if gamers were resistant to change, we'd all still be playing 2D 8-bit games with cheesy music, as opposed to modern, high-definition, ultra-realistic 64-bit games with cheesy music.
To be fair, the cheesy music back then is probably a little better than some of the cheesy music now.
True.
I mean, Christ, if you look at all the posts I make in the video game music thread on the Bogosity Forum, which you should join, by the way, shill.
Okay.
Yeah, I've been posting a lot of that shit. But anyway, as I was trying to say, it's not surprising because you have old journalism, old school journalism, which has always been full of shit and has always treated their consumer base like basically stupid people. And in fact, I know from experience that that's how they're trained to think, because when I went to broadcasting school and did all the broadcasting stuff back in high school, that's what we were told. We were told to view your audience like they are morons, like they are non-thinking robots.
Yeah, that's what you're told to do in the movie industry.
Yeah, that's what you're told to do. And that's exactly what they do. So it's old media defending new media, trying to act like old media.
Yeah.
So no surprise there. You're all a bunch of liars and con artists, and people are finally calling you out for it. So of course they're going to try and put up the fight.
But I mean, you also have these things like, oh, these sexists were so oppressed. You can download an app where you punch Anita Sarkeesian in the face. I remember back in the 90s, people made things like Java apps and stuff like that where you could punch, you know, Bill Gates in the face. I mean, that was pretty cathartic, just beating up Bill Gates. That is nothing new.
But even a little sooner than that, how about on, because I know what you're talking about, the Punch Anita game on Newgrounds. Well, how about the Punch George Bush game?
Yeah.
There were plenty of those.
In fact, I recall someone making a Punch Obama game and everyone said, you're racist!
Yeah, that's usually how it works.
But you can do it to George W. Bush and Bill Gates and, you know, and no one says anything.
No, nobody says anything because
they don't want equality. They want to be the privileged class.
Exactly. It's not about equality. It's about supremacy, and it always has been. I mean, the fact is, to use ABC, or a person from ABC, Barbara Walters herself said the fight for equality is long over, because pretty much women can do just about anything men can do now. And, I mean, except for physical limitations, there's not a hell of a lot to really stop them.
They might make different choices.
Yes, different choices. Like, for example, with the whole STEM stuff, that's the reason why a lot of women aren't necessarily getting into, like, physics and stuff like that, and major math-related, you know, jobs. But that's on them. They choose courses that don't fall into the STEM category, and that's where a lot of these, you know, physicians and math-related jobs and even a little bit of game development falls into that. And then these same people will come out and say, well, that's because it's sexist and all that nonsense. No, it's not that it's sexist. It's that you didn't want to put in the work to get the kind of education you needed to get into that line of work. And you are the only one you can blame for that. So stop making excuses. That's all you're doing. You are making excuses and then trying to put the blame on others. It's your own fault. Unless you have some kind of physical detriment that prevents you from doing something, if you are motivated enough, there should be nothing to stop you. But you're not motivated, are you? Instead, you would rather just make excuses, blame others, and then say, woe is me, I am a victim, please give me money on my Patreon account. God forbid you put in actual work to get where you want to be. Unless your name is Brianna Wu, then you can ask Daddy. But my point is, these people are complainers, they're excuse makers, they are nothing more. And people like Anita Sarkeesian, you are a clear con artist. Brianna Wu, you are a clear con artist. They're not gamers. Especially Anita, who has come out and actually said that she is not a gamer in seminars. But then when she tries to to go through with the feminist frequency nonsense, she'll say, I've been gaming all my life. No, you're a liar. You are a liar, a con artist, and a thief. And ABC, I expect no kind of decency from you. So it's no surprise to the rest of the class here that you would go and side with con men and con women and continue to spread a false narrative to try and further your ratings boosts so that you can appeal to baby boomers who don't know anything about internet culture. So yeah, ABC, fuck you, essentially.
Hackers, terrorists, the NSA. But I repeat myself. Your online security is under attack, and the weakest point is your password. That's why you need LastPass. LastPass plugs into your browser and allows you to randomly generate strong, unique passwords anywhere on the web, all protected by one master password. LastPass sets up in minutes and gives you secure automatic logins throughout the web, synchronizing across all your browsers and all your computers, at home, at work, or on the road. It even securely stores sensitive form data, including credit card numbers. Back up sensitive documents, membership info, Wi-Fi logins, and more. And with LastPass Premium, you can get these benefits on other applications and even mobile devices, and also get priority customer support. Sign up at password.pagosity.tv for a free month of LastPass Premium. Log in securely everywhere using the last password you'll ever have to remember. Go to password.pagosity.tv and get LastPass now. And on the online freedom and privacy front, we've got some good news via Torrent Freak from Greece. A Greek anti-piracy group just lost big in court. They wanted several sites like the Pirate Bay, Kick-Ass Torrents, ISO Hunt, and a few others, blocked by internet service providers. The court in Athens ruled that barring access to these sites is disproportionate and unconstitutional and hinders the entrepreneurial freedoms of ISPs.
About fucking time somebody caught on to that. I mean, yeah, we just had a couple years ago, I think it was a couple years ago now, where the UK finally gave up, you know, and realized, you know, it's not worth our time to chase these people.
Yeah.
But seriously, I think this may be the first time that this has been a court victory in terms of websites like the Pirate Bay.
Oh, and it gets better. They not only said that the blockades won't be effective, not only they're disproportional and in violation of constitutional rights, they also said it would breach people's right to freedom of information, confidential communications, and protections against the collection, processing, and use of personal data, And also, those torrent sites contain links to files that are distributed legally, and those will be needlessly censored by these blockades.
But in reality, that's kind of the point. They want to censor these legal, you know, up-and-comers.
Oh, that's what it's always been about.
They're just using piracy as a platform to do it. When you say piracy, of course, people who don't know any better are going to say, well, piracy is bad, so therefore I should definitely join this guy's cause. Then you got people like Chris Dodd, that worthless waste of space, coming out in full support of all these bills to stop piracy, when in reality, his precious MPAA is just suffering a little heat from competition from indie movie makers who want to distribute their stuff. So, of course, they're going to go after the people that will host it.
And the court also said, quote, "The requested injunction goes contrary to Article 16 of the EU Charter of Fundamental Rights, violating the rights of defendants, providers, and entrepreneurship, and in the basic principle of, get this, internet neutrality, which provides that all information must be handled without discrimination." Now, we've spoken out against net neutrality, but if it does pass here, it might be the same thing. They might be hoist with their own petard, because net neutrality says you can't do anything to favor or restrict any one type of traffic over the other.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's one silver lining.
But I thought that was an interesting argument.
Yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily, when they say internet neutrality, I don't know if they necessarily mean it in the same context that they mean when people say here they want net neutrality. That might be part of it. But I don't necessarily think it would be the exact same context.
Well, here they just mean we want to do what the corporations want to do. That's all it means.
Pretty much. That and we want government to get in on this.
Yeah.
Because that's worked well everywhere else.
Bogosity.tv and all of its services are hosted at GoDaddy. I've been very satisfied with GoDaddy's services and their wonderful 24/7 customer support for over 10 years now. So I'm happy to be able to give you this special offer. Just sign up for any new domain, web hosting, email, or other service and get 35% off with the code WOWNOBOGON. That's WOWNOBOGON. Because there's nothing bogus about these savings on quality internet hosting. Just go to GoDaddy.com and use the code WOWNOBOGON. More bogosity about vaping. That is the smoking of e-cigarettes, which is not really smoking because there's no smoke. It's a safe and effective alternative to smoking. And we've talked about this a few times on the podcast before, but this story has to do with a study in the New England Journal of Medicine. And about this study, the journal itself tweeted, quote, "Chemical analysis of e-cigs vapor show high levels of, survey says, formaldehyde. Authors project higher cancer risk than smoking." Sound familiar? Who else goes on about formaldehyde? Anti-vaxxers? "And a higher risk than smoking." Okay. 480,000 adult Americans die every year from the effects of cigarette smoke. None of that, by the way, is from nicotine, but from other stuff in tobacco. But of course, the news media ran wild with this about how vapes are so much more dangerous than tobacco cigarettes.
Well, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about when we talked about ABC. It's all the same sensational bullshit to get baby boomers to buy into their crap. That's really all it comes down to.
It's clickbait.
Clickbait, exactly.
Well, Joan O'Sara of the New York Times took a much more responsible and much more critical look at this study. So he talks about the fact that this study looked at a particular device called a premium vaporizer. And I think this is how most of them work. You have nicotine dissolved in a liquid, and then it heats up the liquid, and the liquid evaporates, and you breathe in the vapor with the nicotine in it. Most of these devices allow the user to control the voltage, so they ran the device at a low voltage and a high voltage. At the low voltage, they didn't detect any formaldehyde. It's at the high voltage that they found the formaldehyde, and the authors concluded that someone who was a heavy vapor, who used it at a high voltage, was 5 to 15 times more likely to get cancer than a longtime smoker. But here's the thing, people don't vape at that high voltage because it makes a horrible taste. And there was a Greek scientist, Konstantinos Pharsalinos, And he did human studies of vaping and discovered that once you crank that above a certain voltage, which makes it, it basically burns it. And even this voltage that he was talking about is lower than the high voltage in this study. People just couldn't inhale it. The taste was so horrible.
That sounds pretty much like everything else that they say when they do the sensational nonsense. I mean, if you know that nobody would ever smoke at that high, then what's the big deal?
Yeah, it's like we fed 20 pounds of this thing to a rat and the rat died. Well, gee, go figure.
This guy ate 400 bags of potato chips and developed potato-based cancer. Banned potato chips.
Yeah. But I mean, this has the potential to cause real harm. In 2010, 84% of cigarette smokers thought e-cigs were safer than regular cigarettes, because they are. In 2010, that number had dropped to 65%. And a third of those people, a third of vapers, abandoned e-cigarettes and returned to smoking because they were worried about the health effects of vaping. They're more scared of the e-cigs than they are the tobacco cigarettes.
Yeah, that's usually how it works. And I hate to be this kind of conspiracy nut, but how many of these people are backed by big tobacco companies?
I don't know, but...
I mean, they have a lot of interest in stopping vaping.
Yeah.
They have a lot of interest in that. Whether, I mean, I'm not going to flat out say they are definitely behind this.
I don't know.
But, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think anybody really would if they were part of the widespread of misinformation on vaping.
But Nocera spoke to one of the study's authors, David Payton, and he insisted that they've just been completely mischaracterizing the study. All they were trying to do was compare the levels of formaldehyde in e-cigarettes versus cigarettes, and he said, quote, "It is exceedingly frustrating to me that we are being associated with saying that e-cigarettes are more dangerous than cigarettes. That is a fact, not in evidence."
Yeah, a lot of this, too, comes down to similar anti-vaxxer arguments. While it's true that there may be formaldehyde there, it's the level. It's not the fact that it's there itself. And yet, despite it, just like anti-vaxxers, they don't think about in terms of level. They think that's nonsense, but it's not nonsense. That's how it works. It's how much you take in. And the fact is, you can't even take it in unless you vape at a level that you wouldn't vape at anyway, because it would be uncomfortable. So, the whole...
And Dr. Michael Siegel, professor in the Department of Community Health Sciences at Boston University, also took a crack at the study. He said in his blog, quote, "The conditions used to study the e-cigarette aerosol at the high voltage setting were unrealistic, and under such conditions, a vapor would never be able to use the product. This is because the wattage being used was so high that the vaporizer was overheated. For a conventional e-cigarette, it would likely damage or burn the coils, creating a horrible taste which a vapor could not tolerate. This is sometimes referred to as the dry puff phenomenon." So it was even so big that you might actually damage the e-cig.
Yeah, again, if it has to be at a level where it is no longer enjoyable and may potentially damage the product, how dangerous can it possibly be? But, of course, that requires thinking, and, you know, that's not in very high demand.
Well, and of course, people are crying out left and right, mostly left, for the government to step in and do something about this and ban e-cigs. Well, look, even if you think the government should do something about it, all they would have to do is make a regulation just saying, okay, when you make an e-cig, your coil temperature can't be any higher than this amount. And that's all you would have to do to stop this. But that's not. This is just another excuse to ban e-cigs.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is. And it's already kind of started in a lot of states. Not full-out bans, but I know in Connecticut, for example, you're not allowed to buy an e-cigarette unless you're 18 years old.
Which makes no sense. It's kind of like when they first came out with things like the nicotine patch and other things to help people stop smoking, and they delivered smaller amounts of nicotine that abated over time, and you had to have a doctor's prescription to get them, even though you could walk into a 7-Eleven and buy tobacco cigarettes with far more nicotine.
Yeah.
Just no sense.
Exactly. And here's the insulting part about that ban. You act like people under 18 don't smoke. There are people who start smoking by the age of like 10.
Usually when people do start smoking nowadays, I think it's the under 18 crowd, because I think if you wait until you're an adult, There's so much good information out there about the harmful effects of smoking that I think if you make it 18 without smoking, you're probably not going to start. You have to be at those young and stupid teenage years where you think you're immortal and nothing bad can happen to you that you start smoking.
Or even younger, sadly. But the fact is, e-cigarettes have been by far the best tool to help people quit smoking cigarettes. And to deny that tool to people just because they are not of a certain age, even if they already smoke, is just awful. It's downright cruel when you think about it. And the fact of the matter is, these people are fueled by nothing more than irrational fear or simply getting rid of the competition, if that seems to be the case. But all you're doing is hurting people that want to quit a bad habit, who are trying to save their own lives.
And you have people who are giving up the e-cigs to go back to tobacco smoking. Yeah, nice job, guys.
I mean, symbolism or whatever, or exaggeration, but you're basically letting people kill themselves because you're scaring them into doing it.
Exactly.
It's hard to come up with something more disturbing than basically goading people into doing something that will kill them, basically, because you're scared of what you don't know.
You say you don't like Bitcoin? Why not? Oh, because it's not gold. No problem. Just go to coins.pagosity.tv and you'll be taken to Coinable, where you can buy gold or silver coins or bars with your Bitcoins, with literally up-to-the-minute spot pricing. Now there's no reason not to jump on the Bitcoin bandwagon. Whether you're a Bitcoin miner, service operator, Bitcoin business owner, or market speculator, you can get gold and silver from reputable dealers. And Coinable has Bitcoin liquidity for fast processing of your order. Coinable even utilizes a special shipping infrastructure to ensure that your investment arrives safely at your door. And you know what? By going to coins.pagosity.tv, you won't pay a penny more, excuse me, a Satoshi more for your purchase. But you'll help this podcast. You can even sell your gold and silver for Bitcoin as well. Coinable is your Bitcoin to gold marketplace. So go to coins.pagosity.tv and start turning your Bitcoins into gold now. So Dave, you're going to tell us why the social justice warriors are up in arms over a 12-year-old's hair?
Oh, geez. Yeah. Yeah, so let's set the background here. We had a 12-year-old girl, Mallory Merck. That was her name. She basically braided her hair and decided to show off her hair on Twitter.
And it's braided in kind of things that seem to be like dreadlock size, and it's kind of reminiscent of Bo Derek, you know, back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, it does look a lot more like dreads than typical braiding. Which I admit I'm personally not a fan of that look, but there's a difference between personally not a fan of that look and thinking you're racist and you oppress minorities.
So wait, she's racist because she braided her hair?
Yes, she's racist because she braided her hair.
Wow.
And not only that, but they actually bullied her on Twitter. They bullied her on Twitter and I think she actually apologized.
Oh, yeah, she did.
Over something that I'm sure she doesn't even know much about.
Well, I mean, she just saw someone else who had her hair braided that way, thought it was cool, and braided her own hair that way. But now they're saying it's cultural appropriation, as if there's anything wrong with that.
Let me tell you something about cultural appropriation. It doesn't count if it's taken from white people, according to these people.
Well, now, wait a minute. I eat Indian food. Is that cultural appropriation?
Do you like it?
Yeah.
Then yes. That's if you ate it but didn't like it and felt that you were simply repenting for your sins, then maybe it wouldn't be. But the fact that you like it, that's cultural appropriation. I've seen some of the dumbest comments when it comes to the cultural appropriation debate. I mean, like, for example, a guy dresses up in a kimono and is, you know, like a geisha girl for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
That's cultural appropriation, you know.
Yeah.
Just all kinds of crazy nonsense. They tried to say that Avril Lavigne was using cultural appropriation when she made a music video celebrating Japanese culture. It's stupid.
Well, you also have tweets from the editor of Ebony.com, who said it was, quote, psychological torture, and said, quote, our bodies, our music, our fashion, our lips, our hair, everything about us is ripe from the picking by people who do not treat us well. And then another one said, quote, this is not happy cultural mixing where you bring the blonde and I bring the braids because you hate me and tell me as much all the time. Now, wait a minute. When has this particular 12-year-old girl said that she hates blacks? What has she personally done to not treat blacks well?
Was born with white skin.
Yeah. I mean, it's collectivism. It's racism. You're white, therefore you're guilty of all of the other sins of white people.
It's the racial and leftist version of original sin is really what this comes down to. It's bullshit creationist argument with a left racial twist. And the sad part is, like I said, this little girl probably had no idea what the hell any of this meant. Probably had no idea. I mean, I'm sure she understood. She probably didn't even know how the hell she could possibly be racist or what cultural appropriation is or psychological trauma. She probably had no idea what any of these people were talking about.
Well, here's what she actually said in her apology, quote, though overwhelming and harsh, thank you for trying to educate me. It's appreciated, actually. Sorry for perhaps making it seem like I am racist or appropriating a culture. I honestly just wanted longer hair, and I saw a woman on the street with box braids, and I really liked them. I had no idea that it would turn me into a racist and stupid white girl. I just wanted a hairstyle. My sincere apologies to anyone I have personally offended, and my intent was most definitely not to hurt or offend anyone or their culture. I love all of you.
Well, shit, she's more mature than any of the adults in this conversation.
Yeah. But it's just, okay, she's a 12-year-old girl. They bullied her into beating down. But I really hate it when adults who should know better do this and back down and apologize. Because it's time to start standing up and saying, no, look, I'm not going to cower in front of bullies, and that's what you are.
It's time for people to come out and say, fuck you. Really. I mean, it's in all seriousness, how many times do you see stories like this where people who did nothing wrong, all they did was something that hurt nobody, and yet these bullies who try to play the role of the victim, and that's probably the sickest irony of all, they come out and they try to play the victim, and you want to talk psychological torture? How about the psychological torture you did to a little girl that you beat her into submission because she braided her fucking hair? I just, fuck these people. Fuck them so hard with something rusty and pointy. They piss me off. I think that's pretty clear.
I think we got that message, yeah. Bogosity.tv is a participant in the Amazon Services LLC Associates Program, an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for sites to earn advertising fees by advertising and linking to Amazon.com. Just clear your cookies and go to Amazon.bogosity.tv, or check the right-hand side of the podcast page for Amazon's best deals, including the deal of the day and limited-time lightning deals on all sorts of great products. So next time you buy online, go to Amazon.bogosity.tv. Somewhere in the city, a crime has been committed. A suspect is apprehended by the dedicated detectives who investigate crimes, while being narrated by a man who sounds like he's been smoking way too many cigarettes. The tobacco kind, not the vapes. Sorry about that. All right, anyway, you know the story. They interrogate the guy for hours. Finally, he breaks down from the onslaught of their mad truth-finding skills, and he confesses. They have their man. Or do they? Recently released research has shown that even in normal, mentally healthy adults, police interrogation techniques can plant in the mind of a perfectly innocent person the false memory of them committing the crime.
That don't surprise me. That don't surprise me one bit. I mean, think about it.
And it took them less than 3 hours.
Yeah. Well, think about it. It's kind of the same mentality of what goes through the minds of people who are being tortured. You have all this pressure on you, and you're just trying to get out of there.
Well, and it's probably a social defense mechanism, you know, going back to when we were hunter-gatherers or whatever. You know, you were kind of forced to align yourself with what everyone else believed.
And not only that, but, I mean, especially if you're scared.
Yeah.
And you don't have someone there to defend you.
But it's not like they're afraid, and so they falsely confess out of fear. They remember it in vivid detail. And this is one of the things we hear. We also hear this from, like, those recovered memory crap people and past lives and stuff like that. Oh, there's no way they could make it up or falsely remember at that level of detail. Yes, there is. These memories are every bit as detailed and nuanced as any other memory you have in your head that is real.
Well, just like near-death experiences where they said they saw the light and all that nonsense.
Yeah. Well, okay, Dave, what do you remember from when you were, say, 7 years old or somewhere in that age?
You're asking, I'm not a guy with good memory.
Well, but okay, go a little older if you have to.
Okay, 9/11. I remember where I was then. I was in middle school. I was 14. I was in homeroom when that happened. I remember we were sitting there in homeroom when all of a sudden a teacher from another room came in and called the teachers out. And they came back in, dead silence. Didn't say nothing. We all kind of knew that something happened, but we weren't sure what, and we definitely didn't know on what kind of scale something happened.
Well, I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when I heard the news that the Space Shuttle Challenger had blown up. And that was, what, 1986? But here's the thing. Neither one of us actually remember that. What you're remembering is the last two or three times that you remember it. And each time you remember, it's like making a copy of a copy. There are like these little changes that get come along. Details get messed up. Embellishments get made.
That makes sense.
And so what happened here in this study was there were lawyers and statisticians. They published a paper stating that 4.1% of criminal defendants who are sentenced to death in the U.S. are falsely convicted. So psychological scientist Julia Shaw from the University of Bedfordshire investigated this and found that if people are questioned in just the right way, innocent people can fabricate stories in their minds with so much detail, they can actually convince themselves that they committed a crime they are completely innocent of. Quote, our findings show that false memories of committing crime with police contact can be surprisingly easy to generate and can have all the same kinds of complex details as real memories. All participants need to generate a richly detailed false memory is 3 hours in a friendly interview environment where the interviewer introduces a few wrong details and uses poor memory retrieval techniques. And they did this with 60 university students. They asked their primary caregivers to fill out a questionnaire talking about what experiences they've had between 11 and 14, elaborating as much as they remember. And so they described two events to each of the students. One was something real that they experienced, and one that was false and never happened. And for half of the students, they invented something like a fake dog attack or an injury or something like that, losing money. You know, something fairly innocuous, but that should be memorable. And the other half, they invented a crime that came to the attention of the police. And none of them had ever committed a crime or been questioned by the police or anything. And what they did was they took the false event and kind of gave them enough details of their life around it. And so they were struggling to remember what the false event was. And they were very friendly and they're like, oh, keep trying. Here are some different memory strategies. And the more they did it, the more vivid that memory came and the more convinced they were it was the truth. Of the 30 students who were told they'd committed a crime in the teenage years, 71% of them ended up developing a false memory. Of the 20 who were told they committed some kind of assault with or without a weapon, 11 were able to describe in incredible detail their interaction with the police on the matter, even though it never happened. And 76.6% of the 30 students who were fed the false stories about the teenage years that weren't of a criminal nature still ended up forming false memories about them too. And they were just as detailed. The false memories were just as detailed and just as real to the participants as the real memories, right down to giving them similar ratings of confidence, recalling them with the same clarity and sensory detail. And apparently, if you just give them these small little details that are true, that can convince them of a much bigger lie. And so the author said, quote, "In such circumstances, inherently fallible and reconstructive memory processes can quite readily generate false recollections with astonishing realism. In these sessions, we had some participants recalling incredibly vivid details and reenacting crimes they never committed. This research speaks to the distinct possibility that most of us are likely able to generate rich false memories of emotional and criminal events."
Holy shit.
I know, right?
That is some insidious, borderline evil genius levels of trickery and just, god damn.
But you have to understand, we didn't know about false memory syndrome until a few decades ago. You know, a century ago when the police were doing all this or longer, they had no idea that someone could make a false memory. So they came up with these different interrogation techniques. And when it resulted in a confession, they said, oh, hey, this works. Let's put it in our box. And they just kept on going. They have no way of knowing they were implanting false memories.
Even still, man, that's like,
I mean, now that we know it, of course, it's inexcusable.
It's evil.
Oh, yeah.
It's evil. There's no other word for it. It's evil. You know what it reminds me of? It almost reminds me of, like, even more evil and detailed way of like a hot reading or of a cold reading that you see from psychics. It's kind of the similar principle where, except it's kind of in reverse. Instead of the fishing for memories, you're essentially giving them the memories and fishing for a confirmation of your own, I don't want to use the word bias, but you're essentially a confirmation of what you're looking for.
Yeah. Well, the psychics do that too. Penn and Teller made that clear in the first episode of Bullshit. They're just messing up people's memories of their loved ones.
Yeah, and I have a personal vendetta against psychics. So, yeah, this kind of hits home to me, too. I have an aunt who died back in 2008, and my mother was very distraught from that because she lost her sister, a sister she was very close with. So, of course, to ease her pain, she went to these scumbag motherfuckers. And, yeah. Listen, I don't like seeing people get taken advantage of in the worst possible situation. And the fact is, this is pretty much on the same level as that. If not worse. If not worse, because it's not like they're just taking their money. Which, that's bad too. But you're using the same techniques to take away somebody's freedom.
Well, what about the cases where, and we saw this, I think, in the 90s with, like, daycares, where they were actually able to implant false memories, convincing kids that they'd been sexually molested, and we have people who say, well, initially I didn't think I was raped, but then I talked to all these rape counselors and everything, and they convinced me I was raped. You know, if they're putting in false memories of something that never happened, and it's something traumatic, that can create the same psychological trauma as actually going through it, because the memory is just as real.
And to do that, there's not even words for that. How could you do that to a kid?
Well, they didn't know they were doing it to kids at the time.
Ugh.
But now we know, and there are no more excuses.
That's too disturbing for me. I mean, I could take a lot, but that's nuts. Disgusted. Just disgusted.
History is written by the winners, and so apparently is economics. That's why there's LibertyClassroom.com. Probably the best single learning resource for history and economics on the web, LibertyClassroom.com teaches U.S. history, Western Civ, and economics from actual university professors. There's lots of free material to get you started, including introductory lectures on all these subjects. And when you sign up, you get the full site's content for just $99 a year, less than the price of 2 cups of coffee a month. And if you type in the promo code BOGOSITY in all caps, you'll get your first year for just $88. Lectures are available in both video and audio format, so you can watch or listen to them on your computer, your phone or tablet, or in your car. Learn at your own pace about the subjects you're interested in and become a more effective debater. You'll also get access to lots of supplemental materials and even the professors themselves via the discussion forum and even live video chats. Inform yourself against the myths and propaganda of our society. Visit libertyclassroom.com. And now let's kick the teleprompter of this week's biggest bogon emitter. Yes, it's Barack Obama again, and don't ask me how many times it is now, I've lost count. But this has to do with his recent State of the Union address, which I didn't watch because, after all, it was a rerun. But anyway, Associated Press did some fact-checking that basically tore a lot of his speech apart. For example, their first thing they talk about is Obama talks about, quote, "A growing economy, shrinking deficits, bustling industry, and booming energy production. We have risen from recession freer to write our own future than any other nation on earth." What the AP actually says is, quote, "The economy is still recovering from the deep scars left by the Great Recession. Job growth has been healthy, but fueled in part by lower paying jobs in areas such as retail and restaurants, which have replaced many higher paying positions in manufacturing and construction. Part-time jobs also remain elevated. There are still 1.7 million fewer workers with full-time jobs than when the recession began in December 2007, and the income of the typical household is below its pre-recession level." And I'm linking in the show notes to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and their labor force participation rate. It's been pretty much steadily declining since 2009. As of December 2014, it was 62.7%. That is the portion of working age people who actually have jobs, and that is the lowest it's been since December of 1977.
Damn.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, Obama taking credit for energy production is also a joke. The current boost is primarily due to fracking, which Obama opposes, and states, not the feds, not Obama, but states opening up more land for drilling. Obama had nothing to do with that. So they also talk about Obama claiming to lower the cost of community college to zero. The AP says, quote, "Zero for qualifying students," so they don't all get it, "an estimated $60 billion over 10 years to the Treasury. The proposal requires states to contribute about a quarter of the money, and getting them to go along is bound to be tough, just like it is with Obamacare, just like it is with everything else like that they've tried."
You know, when it comes to this whole free college nonsense, because I've heard a bunch of people who have been championing this nonsense as of late, you're trusting this guy who completely fucked up your healthcare.
Yeah.
To do the same thing to college? Also, you use that word free, but I don't think it means what you think it means.
Well, I mentioned on, I think it was the Gamergate podcast we did, I mentioned codeacademy.com, which is a place online where you can go even if you're a complete beginner and learn about coding and jump right in and start programming with different languages, and they explain the concepts and everything. And it works really nice. But imagine if the federal government had tried to do it and it had worked out like Obamacare. Next claim, quote, "We've set aside more public lands and waters than any administration in history." And apparently the key word there is waters. "Obama has protected," whatever protected means, "fewer acres than his four predecessors, including George W. Bush. And what put him on top was expanding the Pacific Islands Monument. And it's nearly all water, and there's not really many practical applications from it. They did ban commercial fishing and deep sea mining and things like that, but people really weren't doing it there to begin with, so yeah."
Wasting everybody's time.
It's like the Emancipation Proclamation. You free the slaves everywhere you can't.
Yeah, basically. It's just wasting everybody's time and making yourself look like the cool kid.
Obama said, quote, "Thanks to a growing economy, the recovery is touching more and more lives. Wages are finally starting to rise again. We know that more small business owners plan to raise their employees' pay than at any time since 2007. The AP says, quote, "Average hourly earnings rose just 1.7% in December from 12 months earlier, according to the Labor Department. That's about half the rate that is typical of a healthy economy and actually lower than the previous month. Economists generally expect wage gains to accelerate this year as unemployment continues to fall and businesses are forced to offer higher pay to attract workers, but there is scant evidence that is happening yet." And once again, I feel I have to point out it's easy to grow if you're at the bottom.
Yeah. If I have a penny and I find another penny, shit, I just doubled my entire wealth.
There you go, twice the net wealth you have. If you keep that up, you'll be a billionaire by lunchtime. The fact is, we now have more businesses shutting down than starting up, and that's something else that hasn't happened for 35 years.
Sad.
Obama also said, quote, Instead of getting dragged into another ground war in the Middle East, we are leading a broad coalition, blah, 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 blah. AP said, quote, the U.S. has been slow to set up long-promised training for the moderate Syrian opposition and has yet to begin the actual vetting of the rebels. Also, despite persistent pleas from the rebels, the U.S. hasn't sent the more lethal weapons they want. U.S. officials have expressed concerns that the weapons could end up in the hands of insurgents.
Honestly, do we even know who's on what side anymore with this war?
We don't. The AP doesn't even give you an idea as to what a clusterfuck it is out there.
Every time we train somebody or give weapons to somebody and say, oh, they're taking out the terrorists, they turn out to be the terrorists.
Yeah. Or we have to support the resistance here in country A, and we have to fight the forces controlling government in country B, and they're the same group of people.
Yeah, pretty much. Nobody knows what the hell is going on over there. Well, the only thing we know is a lot of innocent people are getting blown to smithereens, but who cares about that?
Yeah, and they're creating more terrorists who hate America. And they were really disappointing with Obamacare. They just can't let go of their apologetics on that. They do mention that 10 million people are now insured who weren't before. But in this case, before means after 15 million people lost the health care coverage Obama promised they could keep. So they're still down a net 5 million.
Well, you could keep your plan or not, because I said it was terrible. Now give it up.
So, really, although I do credit AP for fact-checking the speech, the fact is they were way too easy on him. Basically, everything he said was either an outright lie or spin on false statistics, like getting out of Afghanistan means leaving 15,000 soldiers there. He mentioned the deficit has been cut by two-thirds, which just means that the debt is growing by one-third less. And by the way, that's cut from his enormously huge 2009 stimulus package. He mentions both parents working as an economic necessity while bragging about how great the economy is, and that's why we need to pay for childcare and things like that, government give more money to people. Even though the last time the economy was really great, back in the 1950s, we didn't need both parents working. Probably because the tax rate on families was more like 2 or 3% than 50 or 60. And I mean, just on and on and on all through the speech. In fact, I think Stefan Molyneux did that.
Probably.
So if you're still an Obamaton even after all this, I hope you enjoy the crumbs that your filthy rich elitist president is letting you have while he and his cronies get richer and richer off of our backs. Meanwhile, the rest of us have come to realize that only Barack Obama could be this week's biggest bogon emitter. Do you want answers to creationist claims against evolution? Would you like to know more about evolution yourself, or even engage creationists more directly, with actual peer-reviewed sources to back you up? My book, How Evolution is Scientific, is designed to show the basics of evolutionary theory and how it is so well supported using the scientific method. It's impeccably sourced, with references to the actual scientific material, and is arranged using the creationists' own criteria of what is scientific. Using their own arguments against them, see how evolution is scientific, but creationism is not, based on observations, accurate predictions, logic, and evidence. Get answers to common creationist claims, and even a primer on abiogenesis, the start of all life. It's all in my book, How Evolution is Scientific, available at Amazon and on Kindle, EPUB, and PDF as well. Get How Evolution is Scientific and never be taken in by creationists again. And now it's time to put a tail on this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
And this week, it goes to the National Sheriff's Association and the Fraternal Order of Police. And if you were wondering why ABC didn't make Idiot Extraordinaire for what we talked about earlier, just listen to this. These police groups, and many more, are protesting an Android app called Waze, a very popular mobile app that lets people, it's basically crowdsourcing for maps, and they can tell them where things are, they can report accidents, traffic jams, they can talk about roads and landmarks, where the cheapest nearby fuel is, and where the police are. And they actually have different icons for police that are out in the open and police that are hiding themselves trying to trap speeders.
Honestly, that sounds like a very useful app.
Yeah, but the police are wanting Google to pull the plug on it.
Of course they are. But what happened to the old, well, if you don't have anything to hide?
Well, no, that doesn't mean them. That's just you people.
I should have known. I should have known 40 more lashings.
And they say, well, this puts officers in danger that people are going to be stalking them. And Sheriff Mike Brown is the chairman of the National Sheriff's Association Technology Committee. He said, quote, the police community needs to coordinate an effort to have the owner, Google, act like the responsible corporate citizen. You don't want me to get into how many wrong things there are in that expression. They have always been, and remove this feature from the application even before any litigation or statutory action. And guess what? They cited the murder of those two police officers in Brooklyn.
Of course they did. Of course they fucking did.
Yep, using the murders of your fellow policemen as political fodder so that you can get more power and you can stomp on something you don't like. Yeah, nicely done.
Scumbag motherfuckers.
Now, there are reports that the murderer was using the Waze app, but the investigators don't think he actually used it to find his victims. I mean, you know, it's just, it's one of those things that, I mean, 50 million people are using this app. So, yes, you can find criminals who are using this app because 50 million people use this app.
I mean, it's the old, if a guy robs a bank and then takes the bus to get out of there.
Yeah.
Do you blame the bus company?
Or like that one mass shooting and it turns out the guy played Call of Duty. Well, Call of Duty caused the shooting. No.
Yeah, it's just excuse making, really.
Yeah.
It's excuse making. That's all it is. And in reality, that's what a lot of the problems are with everything today. It's excuse making.
Like Jim Pasco, executive director for the Fraternal Order of Police, quote, I can think of 100 ways that it could present an officer's safety issue. There's no control over who uses it. So if you're a criminal and you want to rob a bank, hypothetically, you use your ways. Yeah, notice how he does hypothetically and not pointing to criminals actually doing it.
Hypothetically, I could call a unicorn and fly to the planet Mumbo.
But they've done this before. There was an Apple app. In 2011, senators asked Apple to get rid of it because it alerted drivers to sobriety checkpoints.
Of course. But I want to know, did Google bitch out?
Well, we don't have a report on that yet. I don't think Google's responded.
Well, Google, don't bitch out. You've been doing pretty good so far as of late with, you know, standing up to, like, the NSA and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
Don't bitch out here.
And you also have some good comments from Nick Selby, who is a detective and CEO of Street Cred Software in the Dallas area. He makes intelligence tools for law enforcement. He said, quote, officer locations often aren't secrets. Uniformed police officers often are there to present a professional presence to deter crime. Often they elect roadside signs that say things like police officer ahead. The mere fact of an app pinpointing to its users that an officer is at a certain location doesn't strike me as any more scary than, say, CBers in the 70s calling out where Smokey is running radar.
What is the problem with letting people know that cops are ahead? I mean, all you're doing is just basically saying, don't break the law, you'll get caught. And isn't that what we're all aiming for with the police? For people not to break the law?
Yeah, I mean, if you know the police are out there trying to detect speeders, they're just going to slow down. Well, isn't that what you want them to do?
No.
No, they want the money from the tickets. That's what exactly they want. We've established that.
You could say all you want that they don't have quotas, and they can claim they don't have quotas, but we all know that's bullshit.
Oh, yeah, we've covered it too many times.
I mean, in Connecticut, again, a couple years ago, we had a controversy because there was a memo was leaked out from the state police saying that if you get so much money from tickets, they'll buy you a pizza or some nonsense.
Well, I remember a number of years ago, because what people usually do is, you know, they see a cop at a speed trap or something, they'll flash their lights to oncoming traffic to warn them about it. And there was a move, I think, in several states to make that illegal, and the court said, no, we got a First Amendment, we got free speech.
Yeah.
You can't stop them from doing that.
And really, that applies here.
Yeah.
That absolutely applies here. But, you know, since when do cops care about that?
Nah.
I mean, if you talk to most cops, they tend to be very authoritarian no matter what side of the political spectrum they're on, because the way they see it, they are the law. You obey them, or they backhand you with a nightstick.
Here's an interesting experiment you can do. Just go up to a police officer and just ask him if he remembers his oath that he swore. And the sad part is, a lot of them don't remember. They have completely forgotten the fact that they swore an oath to defend the Constitution.
Yeah, but who cares about that?
And all of that makes these police organizations this week's
Idiot Extraordinaire!
Well, that wraps up this It Stinks edition of the Bogosity Podcast. As always, you can come to forum.bogosity.tv to read the show notes and join the discussion. This podcast depends on you to keep going, so please donate using the links on the website, and feel free to join in by sending a question, statement, news article, or rant to podcast@bogosity.tv. You can even stick it in an audio file if you want. Thank you for listening, and thanks again to Dave Turcotte for joining me.
It was good to be here, and since you made a critic reference, I'll make one too. I voted for Duke Phillips.
Until next time, here's a quote from L. Neil Smith. Few things are more laughably pitiable than authority once it has been successfully defied. The Bogosity Podcast is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.
Bogosity.
Although I should point out that actually wasn't a critic reference. This year, it's all Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Ah.
And there was this one, I forget which movie it was, but, you know, they asked the guy, do you like it? He smiled, gave him the okay sign, and said, it stinks.
Oh.
So that's what I was doing.
See, I first thought of the critic, because...
Yeah. Well, that's good, too. That's a good show, yeah.
Both good shows.
John Lovitz.
I think the critic was kind of ahead of its time. In a way.
It was.
I actually have the complete series on DVD.
Oh, cool. I wonder if it's on Netflix somewhere. I should watch it again.
It's not. I've looked.
Ah.
Fox. You can find a lot of it on the... Yeah. They got rid of King of the Hill, too.
They should do that with a lot of those old shows that didn't really go anywhere, like Herman's Head. That was a good show. Things like that. You know, it's like there aren't enough episodes to put them in the syndication. Probably not enough demand to release them on DVD or anything like that. But hell, put them up on Netflix.
There was also that one show that Jason Alexander was a part of. Something, the Duck. I forget.
Oh, Duckman.
Duckman. That's another one that should be on Netflix.
Yeah.
All those shows. Dilbert's on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Dilbert was good.
Yeah, it was good. Those were all good shows. I always thought The Critic, though, did a better job at reference humor than Family Guy.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of Family Guy at all.
Yeah, I like it. I like the first, cutaways and everything are funny.
The original season was funny. Like, when it first started...
Yeah, you gotta love the Brian and Stewie stuff. That's good stuff.
When it first started out, it was funny, but then it turned into mostly, like, I don't know, the equivalent of fart jokes, and Seth MacFarlane is Brian the dog.
Yeah.
This is his actual opinion.
Yeah, that's true.